to the Enneagram 2.0 podcast. I'm Beatrice Chestnut.
And I'm Udaniel Pai.
And today we are continuing our three-part series on the subtypes in relationships.
Right. And this is the time to talk about heart types. And as if you followed our last episode in which we talked about body types, you already know that we talk both about the person of that type's patterns and how relationships are for themselves and how the relationship patterns are for their partners.
Right. Basically, some tips for people of that subtype to grow and be more conscious and aware in relationships and actually use relationship as a path of growth, which it can be very, very much when we, you know, see it that way consciously. And also for partners of people who are have particular subtypes, so they can maybe learn a little bit about what they might do or try to orient themselves to their partner or their friend in a way that can enhance the relationship.
As a matter of fact, I think that there is no complete growth without talking about relationships. And especially in the harder parts of the relationships, what triggers us and how we adapt and how we have this mirroring effect on the other person. We see what's not that easy for us to see in ourselves. So it is a very central part of inner work, relationships.
Right.
And no doubt that to talk about self-press 2, you must be the one starting, Beatrice.
Okay, yeah. It was funny. I was just thinking it's a little bit painful sometimes to talk about, to think about, to face some of these relationship patterns because they tend to be very hard to change. And sometimes they're the place our ego shows up the most obviously and in a way that can be painful to see. And so on cue, we're now talking about my subtype. So I'll talk a little bit about self-preservation twos. And I'm remembering that we did a retreat recently, one of our experiential retreats, Retreat A, as we used to call it. And there were several people there who had self-preservation two mothers, and not in a good way, which can happen. And of course, maybe it's a good moment to say that our relationship expectations or transference patterns, as it's sometimes called in the psychotherapy business, are set up by our parents. So one of the things, just a general tip for everyone, is to work on your relationships, really make sure that you've gotten really aware and conscious of the patterns that got set up with your parents. Because that's the best way to not act them out unconsciously on your partner or your friends. Okay, so self-preservation twos. Now, self-preservation twos are more fearful two than the other twos, less trusting, and it's the counter type. And so there's more ambivalence about connecting with people because it's this sense of, I really want to connect. I really want to know that you like me or love me. I want to be special to the important people in my life. And sometimes I compulsively give and focus on them too much in some cases in order to, you know, get that attention that I really want. But it's interesting because like the theme that came up with people who had self-preservation two mothers is, on the surface, it can seem like the self-preservation two is just focusing on other people and trying to be likable and ingratiate themselves by doing things for others. But there is a strong theme, and I think with all twos, but especially self-preservation twos, often in a way the self-preservation two has a hard time seeing where it's kind of, it's all about me. You know, I say it's about you, but really it's all about me in a way that I don't acknowledge, right? And that can be really crazy making for people in relationship with self-preservation twos, because the self-preservation two is saying, what? I'm doing anything and everything to please you, to make you happy, to support you. It's not about me, but really the underlying motivation is, I want to get you to pay attention to me. I want to, it is all about me at a deeper level. And again, often in a way that self-preservation twos don't see. So it can be tricky working with a self-preservation two in relationship, especially if that person's not very conscious. And of course, for all the people we're talking about, if the person is more conscious or making efforts to be more conscious, it's a lot easier to be in relationship with them. For a self-preservation two, I think it's important to remember that they're very sensitive, extremely sensitive, which of course makes everything I've said so far even a little bit more difficult. Very sensitive, easily hurt. And so it's really important if you're in relationship with a self-preservation too, to put in the good stuff, right? If it's all negative, the self-preservation too can have a really hard time staying engaged and working on their part in things. So try to find something that's positive, but also try to help the self-preservation to see what the dynamic really is, because sometimes pride makes it so the self-preservation too doesn't really want to see that, oh, I'm not really trusting you, or I'm afraid of you rejecting me, or I'm just doing something to get something from you. Sometimes the self-preservation too has an even harder time seeing all that, and especially recognizing how their fear plays a role and their mistrust in what happens and their deep, deep need for love. It's all about getting that need for love met. And when it feels like we're getting rejected or it's not going well or we're getting criticized, it can be very hard to stay open to the other person to receive, but also to be more aware and own our own stuff. So I guess this is all to say, I know us self-preservation twos can be hard in relationship, even while we want to think we're easy. But what I would suggest for the self-preservation too is to try to be really open and work on having a thicker skin so you can hear critical feedback a little bit more, because that's going to help you align more with your partner. That's going to help you see your own stuff that gets in the way that you may not see of really finding the connection that you really want. I think self-preservation twos are one of the types that really, really deep down wants a loving connection with friends and partners, but blocks it in ways that are very tricky to spot sometimes. So to be very open both to seeing how you create more obstacles in relationship, but also seeing how it's hard for you to really receive and work on the vulnerability that it takes to really admit when you've made a mistake or when you've been at fault, and also to really open up to receive when people really do care about you.
Yeah, thank you for all you said. I think this is all super useful. And I'll make a few comments. But before I do, I want to say a few general things about choosing relationship. And I think that emotions rule and relationships rule. So the mix of both things is that relationships tend to become very intense. And what I mean about intense here specifically is that relationships become a total focus, and sometimes this gets overwhelming for the other person that doesn't see it the same way, especially in what the other person perceives as the true person. I think that regardless of subtype, to an extent, the other person makes everything personal. And sometimes for twos, it's hard to understand even what that means, because they think everything is personal. And that for everybody else who's not a two, that's not the case. And sometimes it gets difficult for the other person to deal with that. And then there is the thing of being hard to give the two person feedback, as they tend to take things as offense, and which relates to pride. But talking about self-pressed shoes, I think you talked a little bit about ambivalence and fear, but I liked when you mentioned that mostly at the end, the hard time trusting. I think that it's not enough to understand that the self-pressed shoes are fearful, but also it's harder for them to trust, and they won't show you many times that's the case, because there is the image thing. They don't like to have the image of not trusting. And then another thing is that, and I want to hear from you if you agree or not, I think that in the beginning, self-pressed shoes are the type 2 subtype that finds the hardest to be in touch with anger. It's anger gets a little more hidden, certainly in comparison to the social 2, maybe even more than the sexual 2, because of the sexual energy leading the person a bit more to anger at times. And then there is the tendency to throw tantrums a little bit more than the other 2 type 2 subtypes. And also as a consequence of non-communicated anger. Sometimes anger spills out as tantrum. Now, I want to hear from you also about one last point. Do you think that self-pressed, I mean, all twos indirectly want to be taken care of without asking for anything? And also a little bit in what we call the give and to get strategy that is unconscious in the beginning and hard to admit. But do you think that for self-pressed shoes, there might be some tendency to be taken care of in a more practical way in life?
What do you mean a tendency? You mean to want to be or to be or to...
To... unconsciously and deep inside expect to be taken care of after doing so much for the other person, but in a more practical way in life than the other subtypes of type 2, like the person doing things for them. You know, I'm connecting here all of this a little bit, I think, with the classic work of love languages, and one of the love languages being service, you know, to the other, and like people doing practical things for them, maybe a little bit more of a tendency, or do you think there is no relationship?
I'm not sure. I mean, if I think about myself, and I'm only one example, spending time together is more important to me than people doing. I mean, I like it when people do practical things. I think I don't expect that because it hasn't always happened, and because I've gotten good at doing that myself. I do think what we really want is sort of attention. We want to feel like we're special to the other person, and we want to have time together. That kind of thing feels a little bit more of a priority for me. But of course, if people do practical things for me, again, it's always a double-edged sword. It's hard to take it in. Like if someone tries to do something practical for me, I might try to stop them at first, you know, and they may have to say, no, I want to do it, you know, and there may be a little bit of a fight there. But actually, of course, I, you know, at the end of it, you know, I think self-pressed shoes love it if people do practical things for them. I think it's just, it's, you know, it's all so complicated, unfortunately.
Now, for the other person in an intimate relationship with the self-pressed shoe, see if I understand well, I believe that it's important to talk about the relationship issues a bit more frequently than the person might want to, and also show up and make oneself available and pay attention and to give positive feedback before giving hard feedback. Do you agree? And what would you add?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've said that already. I guess I think I just recognize that that there is that sensitivity there, you know, and so, yeah, I think we've said it all, and probably taken too much time on self-preservation too, for obvious reasons.
And maybe in the beginning, just acknowledge that it's okay to be emotional, given that chances are that the self-pressed too has heard throughout life that they were too much.
Right. Too emotional, too sensitive. I mean, that's, and so again, it becomes sensitive. And it's hard because sometimes the self-pressed too may have a hard time hearing things about themselves that are hard to hear, that are more critical. And so they block that. And then of course it gets worse. So it's, you know, I know we're not easy, although we pretend to be easy or we want to be easy.
Right. Moving on to sexual too, I'll start saying a few things. And again,
I want you to do social second.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yes, we do the sequence. Yeah, so social too, see what you think. I think that in comparison to the other two type two subtypes, they don't find that easy to keep the focus on the intimate relationship because they disperse their attention to many different relationships. Although they're still selective, I think that it's harder for them to keep their attention at home, actually. And they need to be influential outside home. And I think that they are a little bit even more controlling, more, let me say that a bit more authoritarian at times, and they might look a little bit like an eight. And I also think that they make sure the other person understands they are in charge, and they might have even more what we call manipulation, like moving things around so that they have the upper hand in a few ways. So what do you think and what would you add?
Yeah, I mean, I think we need to make sure to remind people that for twos, a lot of this is less conscious. Like certainly a lot of social twos won't think of themselves as manipulative, you know, or controlling. And that's, of course, part of the issue in relationships is because partners and friends experience the social two this way, but it may be hard similarly to the self-preservation two for the social two to hear critical feedback. Because again, the pride makes it so we always want all the feedback and all the relationship communication to be positive about us. And so that can be tricky.
Yeah, before you go on mentioning more things about social two, I want to say that a good self-development task, if you are a two, is to notice if you're taking offense with anything we are saying. Because if you are, it might be that you are denying those things in you and that pride might be a little bit behind it. And again, we intend with these episodes to help people grow. There are always so many positive things to each type in relationships, but we're focusing here, as we do mostly at CP, on self-development tasks. But what else do you think are patterns for social twos in relationships?
Yeah, and again, the intention is to help all types to have more fulfilling relationships and to learn and grow through relationships, which is sometimes means encountering some pain, you know, or feeling insulted, but then working through that. I think for social twos, it's, you know, they tend to have a very good way with people. They tend to be people who are people and very, you know, they can be very gracious and generous and like good speaking with people. Of course, they can then also give too much of themselves, right? And then feel resentful later because, again, they want everyone, you know, the crowd to see them in a positive light. And they are good at that, right? So they can tend to be more powerful than the self-preservation two, more of a leader type, natural leadership ability, natural ability to impact people positively. But of course, sometimes they don't see what their own needs. And so the social two, I think even more than the self-preservation two, can be someone who gives a lot to others, but really doesn't allow others to give to them as much. Isn't aware of their own needs and has a hard time voicing them. So you may have to, if you're in a relationship with a social two, you may have to push a bit to give to that person And I think it's a good thing to do, because social twos can sometimes not leave much room for asking for what they need. But of course, they'll feel either the hurt or the lack or the resentment or the exhaustion for doing so much for others and not getting for themselves. But of course, that's where the control and manipulation comes in. It often means, like, to get what I want, I need to be able to tell you what you want or what you need to do. And that's how I feel good about myself. So it can be really important for social twos to recognize that it's good to be vulnerable in terms of saying what you need, asking for help, opening up to receive love and care from others in the same way that you give to them. And that if it's out of balance, that's never good in any relationship. And with twos, it does tend to be out of balance. And then there is resentment and exhaustion, and that's not good for the relationship. So recognizing that it's important to not give so much, you know, to say no sometimes, to make boundaries, to not be the person who's always doing for others. And sometimes in the beginning, a good thing can be just to withdraw a little bit, just not do anything, not say anything, not feel like you have to get involved. That can be a good first step. And then, of course, a later step is really asking for what you want and taking that in.
Right. Yeah, I think at times the social twos may become too intimate in relationships that are not necessarily meant to be intimate. And now,
or maybe not so much intimate, but putting a lot of time and attention onto relationships that aren't the biggest priority, you know?
But what I mean is going one or two extra, you know, degrees in building a proximity that doesn't necessarily respect boundaries. I think that mm-hmm. social twos might make that mistake. Not always, of course. Now, when it comes to the other person in relationship with the social two, I want to say that I notice with people I know that they really like when the partner follows them in their social ventures, when that person is together with them and sort of backing them up. Mm-hmm. Anything you would like to add?
No, I think that's probably good.
Okay.
Should we move on to sexual too?
Sure. Would you like to start or should I start?
No, why don't you start?
Yeah, I think that it tends to be really all about the intimate relationship for sexual twos. It may become too much, too invasive even for some of the partners. And at the same time, for many partners, it tends to be the most wonderful relationship ever. And that is exactly the trap. Because it creates a total codependency, and not total, but can be very big. And it's very easy for the sexual two to disconnect from all other relationships, like friendships, when they dedicate all their attention to that one relationship with a significant other. And I think that they tend to be very sweet up to the point when they are not valued or, you know, they're not as appreciated as they want. And then there can be a sudden change, a surprising change to being mad, sort of more easily. So it's a quick change. But I see that they adapt to the other person, the partner, way more sometimes than the other two subtypes of twos. It's a radical adaptation. All twos to a good extent adapt and start liking things that the other person likes. But for a sexual two, sometimes I have the impression that it's close to a total adaptation and with exaggeration, becoming a real enthusiast about things that previously they didn't care about. And mm-hmm. With a drive to become the best partner the other person has ever had. And if I can be a little bit bolder because for the sake of explaining, I think that also the best ever lover the person has ever had. Mm-hmm. And I think they tend to be picky with other mm-hmm. people. And there might be a tendency in intimate relationships to go for a person who's really hard to seduce and that others mm-hmm. haven't managed to do that. Mm-hmm. What do you mm-hmm. think?
Yeah, I agree with all that. I also think that the sexual two can have a lot of emotional ups and downs, can really focus on winning that person over, doing whatever it takes, using attractiveness, charm as a weapon. Can be a good way of saying it. And also really suffering if they don't get what they want from the other person. And, you know, when a breakup happens, like you said, they can really shift and change their presentation to please the other person, to be the ultimate partner. But then if things go bad, if there's a breakup, it's like a death. It's like I'm nothing. Yeah. And it can be very, very painful and hard. There could also be some, anger at not if they don't get what they think they deserve from the person after what they've done to adapt to them, to give to them, to be generous with them. Claudio Naranjo used to say they're very generous in the beginning and what they want is a blank check. He also said that it was the, and again, hopefully sexual twos can be understanding that we say this as a way to create understanding and consciousness and growth. But he would also say it was the archetype of the vampire, sort of wanting to be very beautiful, very alluring, brings you in, but then really wants to everything from you, wants you to totally dedicate yourself to them and nothing less will do.
Each of the types and subtypes has its own way of interacting with others in a relationship. If you are interested in learning how to better understand your partner, family members, and friends, you will love our self-guided course called Enneagram Love Languages. Bea and Rodanio provide lessons on being in a relationship with each type. In 9 90-minute sessions, they include the tendencies and challenges with the 9 types and provide key takeaways on how to effectively communicate with, understand, and shift the relationship. We have received overwhelmingly positive feedback from our students. One student said the course was down to earth, practical information presented with kindness and humor, pure gold. As a bonus, we're including the Enneagram Love Languages digital booklet. To learn more, go to cpenneagram.com/self-guide/love. The link is in the show notes.
Okay, we talked a lot about twos. Should we move on to threes?
Yes, let's move on to threes.
Would you like to start with self-press threes, perhaps?
Sure. So the self-preservation three is a three that focuses a lot on work and on security. Someone who's a big workaholic who finds it really hard to slow down or stop. And of course, this is driven both by the three tendency to work hard, both to achieve success and to look good, but also to be good and create real material security. So in order to be successful, not just for the image of that or because that's what other people want them to be, but because they really want to be able to support themselves and the people around them. And often they're very good at that. And they want to be seen as a good person, not just someone who has a good image. And because of all this, they can be very hard on themselves internally. They can be very anxious in a way that other people don't see. Usually they have a very sort of cool, attractive exterior, but underneath they may be really working too hard and really being self-critical and anxious because it's never enough. You know, if you're someone who needs that much security and needs to succeed, it can feel like you're never working hard enough. Now, because of this in relationships, I think often it means that the partner isn't getting the attention that they would like, because all the energy and attention goes toward work and towards getting things done and being a good person. And that takes a lot of energy and focus. And so the partner can feel like they're not really the priority. And it can be hard for them to get the attention because there is this underlying survival instinct that sort of trumps the relational needs of the partner or of friends. And it's also hard for self-preservation threes to rely on other people. They tend to have a hard time being vulnerable and putting themselves in other people's hands or depending on others. They're the ones that other people depend on, not the people who depend on others. And it can be hard if you're a friend or a partner because it's like there's no way in. You know, there's no way to connect. There's no way to be to support the self-pres three and to be someone that they lean on because they're only leaning on themselves. And so I think it can be really, really important for self-pres threes in relationship to learn to slow down, to see the ways that they focus so much on work and getting things done and competing against their own past record that they don't leave enough space for relationships and for just being with people, for just focusing on connecting and being who they are. And I think, of course, a deeper anxiety for self-preservation threes is, I don't do that. So I don't know how to do that. And I don't know what the other person will see if I just slow down and am myself. So of course, for all threes, a big task is letting go of the image or the person you need to be in the world and being more who you really are, your true self. And in relationship, that's even more important because in good relationships, it's both person's real self, vulnerability and all, that meets each other. And that's hard for self-preservation threes to let down their guard, to open up, to be receptive, to really truly connect from a deeper place of their own being. But of course, that's the task.
Interesting. Yeah, I'll just add a few things. I observe that self-pres threes tend to get better in intimate relationships when the discussion is about roles they need to play and not as much the mistakes they are making. Mm-hmm. Like my role as a father, my role as a partner, what is the right thing to do? And they are driven by that also as a goal. Now, they run a risk of having a blind spot in choosing an intimate relationship or making an intimate relationship something utilitarian for their professional goals. And it's like having everything in their personal lives as resources for achieving more and more professionally. That is a big risk, and the person might feel used by the self-pressed three for other goals that are really not about the intimate relationship. It's hard for threes to develop intimacy, perhaps more than for the other two type three subtypes, especially in comparison to the sexual three. But I notice, on the other hand, that harder time connecting to a partner hides underneath a more sensitive thing when it comes to intimate relationships. There is a bigger unattended need, perhaps, in that. And sometimes when they start getting what they need, they feel both overwhelmed and thrilled. I just think that everything we show up in our personality hides the opposite in a deeper level. So it's like they really, really want an intimate relationship, but they can't absolutely see that. And when they start getting it, it's scary. And at the same time, something very fundamental in the inside starts to be fulfilled. And in here, I guess we're talking a little bit about levels of awareness in different stages of evolution for the person. Now, as to the other person in the relationship, I think two things work better. To start by asking the self-pressed three for more quality of time instead of quantity of time, and just gradually, request more time from the person. And another thing is use a little bit the fear factor and the shock factor. Like if you don't really say something that is a risk in the relationship or a risk for the person, the person's health or the relationship with the kids, if you're really not clear, chances are that the self-pressed three won't stop to listen.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I agree. I think if you're a partner of a self-preservation three, you may have to be a bit pushy. But pushy coming from a place of love and wanting to spend time together, wanting the person to receive, wanting more connection, and helping the self-pressed three see that that's possible and desirable. And I think the first step might be pushing them to slow down and make space for that. And again, it could be quality. It doesn't have to be so much time at first, like you say. But I also think expressing a lot of interest in the self-pres three's emotions, how they feel about things, what's important to them. And it could be that you start from connecting around what they're doing or what you're doing together, but then sort of also go to, and how do you feel about that? You know, and what do you need from me? And you may have to press a little bit because they're used to often being the person. Sometimes in their family of origin, they were the one that took care of everybody, even from a younger age. So it can be important to really say, no, really, seriously, I really want to give you something, or I want to support you in some way. And so you may have to press the issue, but the three will be happy that you did, even if they fight at first.
Good. So moving on to social three, I think that in the utilitarian side that also exists here, the social three wants the partner to make them look good socially. And that is a risk, like both in choosing a partner and in what they expect from the partner. And that, of course, pushes them away from intimacy. And, they also have this drive, like, I need you, my partner, to really be positive all the time. I think potentially this is the most positive of all three subtypes of three. And in an exaggerated way is what I mean. And I think it's like a matter of image that they are really concerned about, that the partner thrives professionally also, or in life, or is a successful person from a perspective of what people consider success to be. And that is sometimes overwhelming for the person. And it's like I create an agenda for my partner that is not necessarily the agenda they want. And I see social threes partners adapting to that in ways that they sometimes don't even notice. But what do you think?
Yeah, I think with the social three, there's so much emphasis on image and what things look like, and even like the idea of what a relationship is supposed to look like or be like, which can lead to like some unconscious tendencies to make things more superficial, or make, if it looks good, then it is good. Instead of, is there really a connection deeper down? Is the person really allowing themselves to be vulnerable enough to show up as they really are, not just as the really polished image that they're really good at creating? So I think it's really important for the social three themselves to sort of recognize, well, who am I without my good image, you know, and to allow themselves to be more real and more open and more vulnerable and risk, you know, feeling insecure or bad about their image, or like, it, you know, to even sometimes realize that how much they focus on the image above the reality even. Right. And so to really allow themselves to get more in touch with feelings, to be messy, to show up more as who they are without needing to think about what they look like, which can be very challenging. But I think that the partners of social threes can just encourage that, you know, by mirroring back, by sending messages of like, you know what, I don't care really what you look like as much, you know, because often the partner doesn't, you know, as much as the three does, or as much as the three thinks other people do. Right. And the partner can really encourage them to say what they're feeling or share what they really want or what's really important to them, and not just what they think they need to for the outside world. And to really express positive feelings when the social three doesn't look good, or is being vulnerable, or is sharing more deeply, or is saying more what's really important to them at a deeper level. It's like that's when you need to give them a lot of positive reinforcement to be honest and to be open and to not care as much what it looks like on the outside or who wins or who's the best. You know, I think the partners and friends of social threes can send a lot of really direct messages about, I don't care if you win. I don't care if you're the best. I just like you for you.
Yeah. And that's hard for the social three to hear and take in at times. But one thing I want to add before we move on to sexual three is that it's super useful to create a secret and sacred space to talk about more shadowy aspects of the relationship. But the social three needs to be trusting that it will be a total secret, as I said, and that they will discuss, and then they will be able to get back to being positive and focusing on the positive. Can I move on to sexual three?
Yeah.
So one thing I wanna say and hear from you, what do you think, is that while the social three wants the other person, the partner, to adapt to their social lives, I think that the sexual three does the opposite. They do their social lives because they are adapting to the partner.
Right.
It's like they really want to please the partner, and that's the goal more than the social thing out there. So we talk about feminine or masculine image that they create, but it's mostly for the partner. And and they need the recognition in the intimate relationship way more than the other two subtypes of three. So the goal that they have is a lot about the other person. And everything ends in having to perform in the intimate relationship in all ways. And feeling secretly insecure quite often with the you know, intimate relationship. They are also very dedicated, although they may also have the type three thing of not having much time, but they tend to be way more dedicated to the partner, and in many different ways. It's not only, you know, in the relationship itself or sexually speaking, it's also in helping the other person thrive, but perhaps with a little bit better active listening to the other person in what they want. We sometimes say that sexual threes tend to make excellent coaches because they manage to ask questions and take into account what the other person wants and more. What do you think?
Yeah, I think with sexual threes, there's a lot of focus on their appearance, on what they look like, if they're attractive enough, trying to be more attractive. And often they are very attractive people, but there's a lot of focus on that. But of course, with the focus on that, there's also the sense of never being attractive enough, right? Because that's so important. And it's like that's the way they attract the partner. They get the connection and love that they want. But of course, it's very hard to be open to receiving that because of all 27 subtypes, the sexual three is the most disconnected from themselves at a deeper level, like not really knowing what they want or how they feel or what their priorities are or who they are in some ways. And so it's almost like that not knowing who they are inside fuels even more focus on looking a certain way to attract people. And it's like to attract the relationship that they want. And there is a unconscious sense that if I can just be attractive enough, then I'll attract the relationship and that relationship will make me feel recognized and then I'll be okay. But really, of course, the sexual three needs to create a stronger relationship with themselves at a deep level because they can, in addition to focusing on being attractive, also focus on what they can do for others and how they can support others. And again, that also in a different way leaves them out of the equation in terms of what they need and their achievement as it is just for them, not through the avenue of supporting or coaching or helping other people, which is, again, another way they try to prove their value. But again, like all the subtype strategies, it's an insatiable need. It never gets fixed. It never gets fulfilled. Right. So the way to fulfillment for the sexual three is more focusing more on myself at a deep level. Like, who am I? How do I feel? What's important to me? What do I value? How can I just have my feelings and be myself and trust that will bring me the relationship I need and want, not creating this beautiful outer shell that is something that people can't resist because it's this conventionally attractive ideal. So getting to know yourself more and risking, you know, showing that to other people that you care about. And then, of course, the people who are in relationship with sexual threes mirroring a lot who that person really is as opposed to their outward attraction, you know, so the, you know, not giving them all the positives for what you look like or what you wear, but more, you know, I really appreciate when you share your feelings with me or when you are vulnerable enough to say what hurts you. That's when I'm really drawn to you. That kind of feedback for a sexual three is really helpful because it shows them that what a real relationship will give them is someone who really wants to see who they really are and supports that.
And if you have a sexual three partner, I think that in order to do what Bees just said, it's important to provide a little bit of positive reinforcement and reassurance first, because chances are that the sexual three won't hear you or totally trust you in what you're saying if you don't do that first. Should we move on to fours?
Sure. Yeah.
So you're a very big self-pressed four specialist. So why don't you start with talking about the relationship pattern for self-pressed fours?
Yeah, so self-preservation fours are the fours that internalize their feelings and their pain, that feel things inside but don't always feel comfortable sharing them with others. Now, often the person will say, oh, I only share my feelings with a very few people, including my partner, you know, and in a good relationship, the self-pres four will share their feelings with those closest to them. But even that can be hard. And it can, you can have the feeling like, I don't really know what's going on with my self-preservation for friend or partner, because they look happy on the outside, or they're looking a certain way on the outside, but there's more going on there than meets the eye. And they're not always feeling comfortable to share. And this is because self-preservation fours often get a message early on in life that people like them when they're happy or when they share their positive feelings, but people don't really want to hear their darker feelings or hear about what they're suffering, what's going on in terms of suffering. So they keep that inside. But of course, that's not good for them or the relationship. So it's really important that self-preservation fours get, you know, learn to share more of what's going on inside. And although, of course, they may have had experience of being rejected when they shared their feelings, they may have to risk that and know that that was maybe a person in your past and not all people who will really care for you and be good relationship partners. So it's about allowing for, you know, the self-preservation for it's a lot about allowing them to talk more, to communicate more about how they're feeling. And again, people who know the four type, but not the self-preservation four subtype may think, well, don't all fours share too much about their feelings in relationship? And the self-preservation four is really it's the counter type. It's really the subtype that doesn't share as much. Because again, they're afraid of being rejected. If I really show you all of what's going on inside me, all my difficult feelings, all my pain, then you won't want to be around me. Because again, that's usually they got either direct or implied messages to that effect. And so you need to just sort of put a smile on your face and be someone who is adapts more in relationship than the other two fours. And the self-preservation four will often shapeshift a little bit more than the other two fours, but usually they know they're doing it and it doesn't feel comfortable because like all fours, they want to be authentic. But sometimes they do shapeshift more because again, they may have learned through painful experience that people don't want to connect with you if you're in your deeper emotions, if you're expressing more of your emotions. And so in a sort of counter expectancy way of thinking about fours, it's good for self-preservation fours to share more and for self-preservation for partners to encourage that.
Yeah, I want to add 2 points that may be hard to hear if you're a self-pressed for yourself. But I think it's important that we talk about this. And of course, it's not always that these two things will happen. But I've seen many times self-pressed force ending a relationship when it's good or even when it's at its best. And that speaks a little bit about the recklessness or, you know, self-inflicting pain or going against what's good and, you know, melancholy and a little bit of the masochism that we talk about when we talk about self-pressed force. And on the other end, I think there is a bigger tendency for self-pressed force to stay in relationships that are not working, or even in toxic relationships, because of I can cope, I can endure, and I take in pain and I deal with it, and I don't complain. So I just think that for self-pressed force, it's important to know that this tendency may exist, so that you can self-observe and reflect about that. Both preventively and in case you are facing such a situation.
Right.
Now, when it comes to the self-pressed for partner, any other additional suggestion?
I think that self-preservation fours also often, they have a high pain threshold. So it can be good for the partners to recognize when the person's like working too hard or they're stressed, but they're sort of pushing through that instead of experiencing the stress and letting it help them know when it's time to slow down or go easy on themselves. So I think if you're in relationship with a self-preservation four, it's like encouraging them to do fun things, to be lighter with themselves, to keep things light when you're with them, to allow them to both feel the intensity of their pain and do something about it, but also to be lighter and to have more pleasure and to bring other kinds of things into their experience like that.
Right. Yeah, good point. So social force, I think there is a big tendency here for not feeling worthy of the intimate relationship. I'm not enough. But it's even more like, why would this person want me? And even if they are already in a relationship, they may think so. Why would this person want to, you know, keep the relationship with me? At times, those thoughts come up, and then a lot of depressive tendencies come in. And that also sometimes has a particular manifestation that I think is a huge social problem today, more than psychological, but even bigger for social force, which is body dysmorphia. They really don't see themselves for who they are, how beautiful they are, how worthy they are from a physical perspective. Mm-hmm. And they feel a lot of shame also. And finally, I think that at times, if the partner doesn't listen to their emotional communication or even a little bit of drama, as we call it sometimes, it's very hard for the social four. It starts with, I don't feel understood, and they, why I'm here, I'm wrong, I'm not something lovable, and then a whole loop can start, which is dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Right. Social fours are the fours that feel their emotions the most intensely and will talk about them and can get stuck a little bit, like you're saying, in a kind of sense of inferiority, or if I'm not feeling my deep feelings, there's something wrong. And it can be hard for them to be more practical in relationships and to see the positive both in themselves and in the relationship. You know, I think they can focus a lot on what's missing or experience themselves as victims or, you know, not being good enough. And that can be hard in a relationship. So I think the social four themselves needs to really make an effort all the time to be with what's good in the here and now, both in themselves and see their real strengths and really take in positive messages from partners and friends. Really take that in. Like if someone's seeing, appreciating something about you, really work on owning that, you know, and seeing that that's real. And also the partners of social fours, recognizing that sometimes that exaggeration of suffering can be a way to draw people in. But it will be good to let the person know all the good things you see about them and that you don't see the necessarily the reasons there are that they're finding to suffer, and that really it's okay to be happy and that you are happy with them and that you see their capacity to be light or enjoy life more. And that you help them go in that direction. I think sometimes in practical ways, like doing things together that are just simple and straightforward and fun, or really appreciating certain qualities that they have and celebrating those in very direct ways.
Yeah, I like that you mentioned fun, because I believe that social four is the subtype of four that finds the hardest to have humor. And helps.
Well, ironically, though, I think they often have good senses of humor.
Yes.
And they can often be sort of even.
Yeah, I think they develop that as they grow a bit more, you know.
I mean, I think of social four people I know who are very funny. And sometimes it's a little bit of a dark sense of humor, you know. But I think it's there. And I think that helps a lot. And to celebrate that, to focus on how much you like their humor, or on, again, anything that's positive about them, including their sense of humor.
Yeah, you know, those kinds of people that are very funny because they don't try to be funny.
No. Yeah, archetypally, they're probably not the funny type, but when they develop that, it's a beautiful complement to their intensity and their seriousness of and depth of feeling.
Right, and I think it's essential if you are a social force partner to provide care, provide understanding with a lot of patience, and then comfort your partner, and then after that, help the social force do a reality check, how much they are exaggerating in the negative side. But what about sexual force, B? What would you like to say to start with?
So sexual fours are the fours that lead with anger. When they're hurt, they may not register the hurt. They may get angry. And again, that's a way that the sexual four has of externalizing suffering. Now, a lot of times people find angry people hard to deal with. And so sometimes there's a vicious cycle that gets started where the sexual four feels hurt, gets angry, and then pushes people away and gets hurt even more, rejected even more, because now they're angry and people don't hear what they want to say through their anger. So for the sexual four, of course, they need to recognize that anger is a sign of that there's other feelings underneath. And to get to the feelings underneath so that they can express themselves in fuller ways and not always lead with anger, not always, in some ways, create more problems in relationship through being excessively angry. Now, a lot of times, one of the reason why the sexual four is angry is because they feel misunderstood, or like their needs aren't being heard or met in some ways, right? But if you get angry about that, often your partner won't want to meet your needs or understand you even more, right? It creates more misunderstanding because people react to anger in certain ways. So it's really good for the sexual four to recognize, okay, when I'm angry, how can I get to the feelings underneath the anger or the needs I have and express those more directly in a more vulnerable way without the anger? Now, for partners of sexual fours, what can really help the sexual four is actually hanging out and hearing the anger, right? Sexual fours will sometimes say, if I can get my anger out with my partner, then I can get to the feelings underneath. But if it really helps me if I'm heard, right? So if you're someone who's in relationship with a sexual four, it can be actually good for you to get a little bit stronger in being with someone else's anger, right? That can be a positive thing also. It's like, can you hang in there and say, okay, really try to understand what the person is saying, even if the message is delivered with anger. And so, of course, it'll help if the sexual four is moderating their anger somewhat, because sometimes the anger is so big that part of the intention is to push the person completely away. And of course, all fours, I don't think we've mentioned this, have push-pull patterns in relationships. Sometimes they push people away, sometimes they pull them in. And for the sexual four, they just need to own how much anger can push people away. And if they can moderate the anger and still express themselves authentically, sometimes that means the other person can hear them more. And the other person in relationship with a sexual four can do well to try to keep listening and say, okay, I'm not like this anger is hard to deal with, but if I can really try to hear the message that the anger is conveying, the anger may go away. And there may be a shift if you can hear what the person is saying through the anger and then get to the sadness or the pain or the insult underneath the anger, which is where the sexual four really needs to go, both for their own development, but also to be heard fully and connected with in relationship. Now, the positives about sexual fours is that because they're not afraid of anger, they often show up for more stuff in relationship, right? It's like, think about like all the types that say are afraid of conflict. they withdraw and avoid things in relationships more often because they don't want to have to experience the pain of conflict. And the sexual four isn't doing that, right? So the nice thing about sexual fours is they really show up if you're angry, right? Or if you need to say something hard. They tend to have less fear about hearing the truth in a certain way because they're used to sort of hearing the truth in a very direct way. Also, the sexual four is someone who has a big need to be sort of feel superior or sort of special. It's envy in its manifestation as competition. So there can be a sense of needing to prove themselves and how good they are. And so that also may be something that if you're in relationship with them, you need to hear and sometimes validate, but sometimes, you know, say your opinion. But it's there, there's going to be more forcefulness around needing to be seen as special or on top or something like that. And that's also something to know about sexual fours, and both something for the sexual four to learn to see and be conscious of and moderate, and for the partners and friends of sexual fours to recognize as part of the picture.
Right. Back to the push-pull tendency. I want to say that in my view, sexual fours do that even more than the other two subtypes of four. And I want to clarify that it's not only that anger pushes the other away in the beginning of that tendency, it's also that I, as the sexual four, push you away, especially because there is this more radical, intense quality to the sexual four, and I'll risk everything and I'll go to extreme positions, and then I come back with all the love, and then also like argue or fight with me and then love me. And when I say fight, of course, I'm talking about verbal fight and not too bad, but you know, engage in this conflict and then love me. It's like almost an, but also like an invitation for proximity. If the person understands that, things get more easy.
Yeah.
Now, they are also more accusatory, I think. Like with the sexual one, it's not that different. Like there is something wrong with you.
Yeah. Yeah, and maybe sometimes it's you're not paying and you're not doing something that I want you to do for me, you know.
Yeah. Right. And then for the sexual four partner, I've just one word, resilience. Mm-hmm. And stay there. Don't run away.
Yeah.
And match that energy. And then understand that maybe the sexual four is doing that, again, as an invitation for a deep connection next.
Right, exactly. And, you know, partners who have conflict and can express anger often have juicier connections with each other, because it's partners that are afraid of conflict that can disconnect and disengage in quiet ways that don't really get seen over time. And so recognize that if the sexual four partner is showing up with heat, that can be a positive in the relationship if you can meet them there. And you may have to do some work on your side to meet them there, but that's going to be good for your growth and development.
Beautiful. So I think we have covered the heart types in relationships, hopefully quite well. And anything you would like to add, Bea, or are we?
No. I just hope this helps people, especially at the holiday season, to engage more deeply in the relationships that you have in your life in a way that hopefully enhances your experience and helps you grow.
What can you do differently in the new year? And what can you do different with your partner also in the new year?
Right. And also in friendships as well. So that's it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. Join us again next time for the Enneagram 2.0 podcast, where we talk about all things Enneagram.